She was staring at Luke, who had collapsed to the floor, the carpet around him rapidly turning red. Sebastian raised the dagger again, and Clary flung herself at him, slamming as hard as she could into his shoulder, trying to knock him off balance. She barely moved him, but he did drop the dagger. He turned on her. He was bleeding from a split lip. Clary didn't know why, not until Jay swung into her field of vision and she saw the blood on his mouth where Luke had hit him. Enough! Jace grabbed Sebastian by the back of the jacket. He was pale, not looking at Luke, or at Clary either. Stop it. This isn't why we came here. Let me go. No. Jace reached around Sebastian and grabbed his hand. His eyes met Clary's, his lips shaped words. There was a flash of silver, the ring on Sebastian's finger. And then both of them were gone, winking out of existence between one breath and another. Just as they vanished, a streak of something metallic shot through the air where they had been standing and buried itself in the wall. Luke's Kindle. Clary turned to look at her mother, who had thrown the knife. But Jocelyn wasn't looking at Clary. She was darting to Luke's side, dropping to her knees on the bloody carpet and pulling him up onto her lap. His eyes were closed. Blood trickled from the corners of his mouth. Sebastian's silver dagger, smeared with more blood, lay a few feet away. Mom, Clary whispered. Is he? The dagger was silver. Jocelyn's voice shook. He won't heal fast like he should, not without special treatment. She touched Luke's face with her fingertips. His chest was rising and falling, Clary saw with relief, if shallowly. She could taste tears burning in the back of her throat, and for a moment was amazed at her mother's calm. But then this was the woman who had once stood in the ashes of her home, surrounded by the blackened bodies of her family, including her parents and son, and had gone on from that. Get some towels from the bathroom, her mother said. We have to stop the bleeding. Clary staggered to her feet and went almost blindly into Luke's small tiled bathroom. There was a gray towel hanging from the back of the door. She yanked it down, went back into the living room. Jocelyn was holding Luke in her lap with one hand. The other hand held a cell phone. She dropped it and reached for the towel as Clary came in. Folding it in half, she lay it over the wound in Luke's chest and pressed down. Clary watched as the edges of the gray towel began to turn scarlet with blood. Luke, Clary whispered. He didn't move. His face was an awful gray color. I just called his pack, Jocelyn said. She didn't look at her daughter. Clary realized Jocelyn had not asked her a single question about Jace and Sebastian, or why she and Jace had emerged from her bedroom, or what they'd been doing there. She was entirely focused on Luke. They have some members patrolling the area. As soon as they get here, we have to leave. Jace will come back for you. You don't know that, Clary began, whispering past her dry throat. I do, said Jocelyn. Valentine came back for me after 15 years. That's what the Morganstern men are like. They don't ever give up. He'll come for you again. Jace isn't Valentine. But the words died on Clary's lips. She wanted to drop to her knees and take Luke's hand, hold it tightly, tell him she loved him. But she remembered Jace's hands on her in the bedroom and didn't. This was her fault. She didn't deserve to get to comfort Luke or herself. She deserved the pain. The guilt. The scrape of footsteps sounded on the porch, the low murmur of voices. Jocelyn's head jerked up, the pack. Clary, go and get your things, she said. Take what you think you'll need, but no more than you can carry. We're not coming back to this house. Chapter 6. No weapon in this world. Little flakes of early snow had begun to fall from the steel-gray sky like feathers as Clary and her mother hurried along Greenpoint Avenue, their heads bent against the chill wind coming off the East River. Jocelyn had not spoken a word since they had left Luke at the disused police station that served as the pack headquarters. The whole thing had been a blur. The pack carrying their leader in, the healing kit, Clary and her mother struggling to get a glimpse of Luke as the wolves seemed to close ranks against them. She knew why they couldn't take him to a mundane hospital, but it had been hard, beyond hard, to leave him there in the whitewashed room that served as their infirmary. It wasn't that the wolves didn't like Jocelyn or Clary. It was that Luke's fiancée and her daughter weren't part of the pack. They never would be. Clary had looked around for Maya, for an ally, but she hadn't been there. Eventually, Jocelyn had sent Clary out to wait in the corridor since the room had been too crowded, and Clary had slumped on the floor, cradling her knapsack on her lap. It had been 2 a.m, and she had never felt so alone. If Luke died... She could barely remember a life without him. Because of him and her mother, she knew what it was like to be loved unconditionally. Luke swinging her up to perch in the fork of an apple tree on his farm upstate was one of her earliest memories. In the infirmary, he had been taking rattling breaths while his third in command, Bat, had unpacked the healing kit. People were supposed to take rattling breaths when they died, she remembered. She couldn't remember the last thing she'd said to Luke. Weren't you supposed to remember the last thing you said to someone before they died? When Jocelyn had come out of the infirmary at last, looking exhausted, she'd held out a hand to Clary and had helped her up off the floor. Is he? Clary had begun. He's stabilized, Jocelyn had said. She looked up and down the hallway. We should go. Go where? Clary had been bewildered. I thought we'd stay here, with Luke. I don't want to leave him. Neither do I. Jocelyn had been firm. Clary had thought of the woman who turned her back on Idris, on everything she'd ever known, and had walked away from it to start a new life alone. But we can't leave Jace and Jonathan here either. It's not safe for the pack, or Luke. And this is the first place Jace will look for you. Then where? Clary had started. But she realized, even before she'd finished her own sentence, and had shut her mouth. Where did they ever go when they needed help these days? Now there was a sugary dusting of white along the cracked pavement of the avenue. Jocelyn had put on a long coat before they'd left the house, but beneath it she still wore the clothes that were stained with Luke's blood. Her mouth was set, her gaze unwavering on the road before her. Clary wondered if this was how her mother had looked walking out of Idris, her boots clogged with ashes, the mortal cup hidden in her coat. Clary shook her head to clear it. She was being fanciful, imagining things she hadn't been present to see, her mind skittering away, perhaps from the awfulness of what she just had seen. Unbidden, the image of Sebastian driving the knife into Luke came into her head, and the sound of Jace's familiar and beloved voice saying, "Collateral damage." For as is often the happenstance with that which is precious and lost, when you find him again, he may well not be quite as you left him. Jocelyn shivered and flipped her hood up to cover her hair. White flakes of snow had already begun to mix with the bright red strands. She was still silent, and the street lined with Polish and Russian restaurants in between barbershops and beauty parlors was deserted in the white and yellow light. A memory flashed before the backs of Clary's eyelids, a real one this time, not a wisp of imagination. Her mother was hurrying her down a night-black street between piles of heaped and dirty snow, a lowering sky, gray and leaden. She had seen this image before, the first time the Silent Brothers had dug into her mind. She realized what it was now. Her memory of a time her mother had taken her to Magnus's to have her memory altered. It must have been in the dead of winter. But she recognized Greenpoint Avenue in the memory. The red brick warehouse Magnus lived in rose above them. Jocelyn pushed open the glass doors to the entryway, and they crowded inside, Clary trying to breathe through her mouth as her mother pushed the buzzer for Magnus 1, 2, and 3 times. At last the door opened, and they hurried up the stairs. The door to Magnus's apartment was open, and the warlock was leaning against the architrave, waiting for them. He was wearing canary yellow pajamas, and on his feet were green slippers with alien faces, complete with sprungy antennae. His hair was a tangled, curly, spiky mass of black, and his gold-green eyes blinked tiredly at them. "St. Magnus is home for wayward shadow hunters," he said in a deep voice. "Welcome." He threw an arm wide. "Spare bedrooms are that way. Wipe your boots on the mat." He stepped back into the apartment, Langdon passed through in front of him before shutting the door. Today the place was done up in a sort of faux Victorian decor, with high-backed sofas and large gilt mirrors everywhere. The pillars were strung with lights in the shape of flowers. There were three spare rooms down a short corridor off the main living room. At random, Clary chose one on the right. It was painted orange, like her old bedroom in Park Slope. It had a sofa bed and a small window that looked out onto the darkened windows of a closed diner. Chairman Meow was curled up on the bed, nose tucked under his tail. She sat down beside him and petted his ears, feeling the purring that was vibrating through his small furry body. As she stroked him, she caught sight of the sleeve of her sweater. It was stained dark and crusted with blood. Luke's blood. She stood up and yanked the sweater off violently. From her backpack she took a clean pair of jeans and a black V-neck thermal shirt and changed into them. She glanced at herself briefly in the window, which showed her a pale reflection, her hair hanging limply, damp with snow, her freckles standing out like paint splotches. Not that it mattered what she looked like. She thought of Jace kissing her. It felt like days ago instead of hours, and her stomach hurt as if she'd swallowed tiny knives. She held on to the edge of the bed for a long moment until the pain subsided. Then she took a deep breath and went back out into the living room. Her mother was seated on one of the gilt-backed chairs, her long artist's fingers wrapped around a mug of hot water with lemon. Magnus was slumped on a hot pink sofa, his green slippers up on the coffee table. "The pack stabilized him," Jocelyn was saying in an exhausted voice. "They don't know for how long, though. They thought there might have been silver powder on the blade, but it appears to be something else. The tip of the knife..." She glanced up, saw Clary, and fell silent. "It's okay, Mom. I'm old enough now to hear what's wrong with Luke." "Well, they don't know exactly what it is," Jocelyn said softly. "The tip of the blade Sebastian used broke off against one of his ribs and lodged in the bone. But they can't retrieve it. It moves."
"It moves?" Magnus looked puzzled.
"When they tried to dig it out, it burrowed into the bone and nearly snapped it," Jocelyn said. "He's a werewolf. He heals fast. But it's in there gashing up his internal organs, keeping the wound from closing."
"Demon metal," said Magnus, "not silver."
Jocelyn leaned forward. "Do you think you can help him? Whatever it costs, I'll pay." Magnus stood up. His alien slippers and rumpled bedhead seemed extremely incongruous given the gravity of the situation.
"I don't know."
"But you healed Alex," said Clary, "when the greater demon wounded him." Magnus had begun to pace. "I knew what was wrong with him. I don't know what kind of demon metal this is. I could experiment, try different healing spells, but it won't be the fastest way to help him."
"What's the fastest way?" Jocelyn said.
"The Preacher," said Magnus. "The Wolf Guard. I know the man who founded it. Woolsey Scott. Because of certain incidents, he was fascinated with minutiae about the way demon metal and demon drugs act on lycanthropes, the same way the Silent Brothers keep records of the way Nephilim can be healed. Over the years, the Preacher have become very closed off and secretive, unfortunately. But a member of the Preacher could access their information."
"Luke's not a member," Jocelyn said,
"and their roster is secret."
"But Jordan," said Clary.
"Jordan's a member. He can find out. I'll call him."
"I'll call him," said Magnus. "I can't get into Preacher headquarters, but I can pass on a message that ought to hold some extra weight. I'll be back."
He padded off to the kitchen, the antennae on his slippers waving gently like seaweed in a current. Clary turned back to her mother, who was staring down at her mug of hot water. It was one of her favorite restoratives, though Clary could never figure out why anyone would want to drink warm, sour water. The snow had soaked her mother's hair, and now that it was drying, it was beginning to curl, like Clary's did in humid weather.
"Mom?" Clary said, and her mother looked up. "That knife you threw, back at Luke's, was it at Jace?"
"It was at Jonathan. She would never call him Sebastian," Clary knew.
"It's just..." Clary took a deep breath. It's almost the same thing. You saw. When you stabbed Sebastian and Jace started to bleed, it's like they're mirrored in some way. Cut Sebastian, Jace bleeds. Kill him, and Jace dies. Clary, her mother rubbed her tired eyes. Can we not discuss this now? But you said you think he'll come back for me. Jace, I mean. I need to know that you won't hurt him. Well, you can't know that, because I won't promise it, Clary. I can't. Her mother looked at her with unflinching eyes. I saw the two of you come out of your bedroom. Clary flushed. I don't want to. To what? Talk about it? Well, too bad. You brought it up. You're lucky I'm not in the Clave anymore, you know. How long have you known where Jace was? I don't know where he is. Tonight is the first time I've talked to him since he disappeared. I saw him in the Institute with Jonathan yesterday. I told Alec and Isabel and Simon, but I couldn't tell anyone else. If the Clave got hold of him, I can't let that happen. Jocelyn raised her green eyes. And why not? Because he's Jace. Because I love him. He's not Jace. That's just it, Clary. He's not who he was. Can't you see that? Of course I can see it. I'm not stupid. But I have faith. I saw him possessed before, and I saw him break free of it. I think Jace is still inside there somewhere. I think there's a way to save him. What if there isn't? Prove it. You can't prove a negative, Clarissa. I understand that you love him. You always have loved him too much. You think I didn't love your father? You think I didn't give him every chance? And look what came of that. Jonathan. If I hadn't stayed with your father, he wouldn't exist. Neither would I, said Clary. In case you forgot, I came after my brother, not before. She looked at her mother, hard. Are you saying it would have been worth it never to have had me? If you could get rid of Jonathan? No, I... There was the grating sound of keys in the lock, and the apartment door swung open. It was Alec. He wore a long leather duster open over a blue sweater, and there were white flakes of snow in his black hair. His cheeks were candy apple red from the cold, but his face was otherwise pale. "Where's Magnus?" he said. As he looked toward the kitchen, Clary saw a bruise on his jaw, below his ear, about the size of a thumbprint. "Alec!" Magnus came skidding into the living room and blew a kiss to his boyfriend across the room. Having discarded his slippers, he was barefoot now. His cat's eyes shone as he looked at Alec. Clary knew that look. That was herself looking at Jace. Alec didn't return the gaze, though. He was shucking off his coat and hanging it on a hook on the wall. He was visibly upset. His hands were trembling, his broad shoulders tightly set. "You got my text?" Magnus asked. "Yeah. I was only a few blocks away, anyway." Alec looked at Clary, and then at her mother, anxiety and uncertainty warring in his expression. Though Alec had been invited to Jocelyn's reception party, and had met her several times besides that, they did not by any measure know each other well. "It's true, what Magnus said? You saw Jace again?" "And Sebastian," said Clary. "But Jace," Alec said, how did he seem?" Clary knew exactly what he was asking. For once, she and Alec understood each other better than anyone else in the room. "He's not playing a trick on Sebastian," she replied softly. "He really has changed. He isn't like himself at all." "How?" Alec demanded, with an odd blend of anger and vulnerability. "How is he different?" There was a hole in the knee of Clary's jeans. She picked at it, scraping the skin underneath. "The way he talks? He believes in Sebastian. Believes in what he's doing, whatever that is. I reminded him that Sebastian killed Max, and he didn't even seem to care." Her voice cracked. "He said Sebastian was just as much his brother as Max was." Alec whitened, the red spots on his cheeks standing out like bloodstains. "Did he say anything about me? Or is he? Did he ask about us?" Clary shook her head, hardly able to stand the look on Alec's face. Out of the corner of her eye, she could see Magnus watching Alec too, his face almost blank with sadness. She wondered if he was jealous of Jay still, or just hurt on Alec's behalf. "Why did he come to your house?" Alec shook his head. "I don't get it." "He wanted me to come with him, to join him and Sebastian. I guess he wants their evil little duo to be an evil little trio." She shrugged. "Maybe he's lonely. Sebastian can't be the greatest company."
"We don't know that."
"He could be absolutely fantastic at Scrabble," said Magnus. "He's a murdering psychopath," said Alec flatly. "And Jace knows it."
"But Jace isn't Jace right now," Magnus began, and broke off as the phone rang.
"I'll get that. Who knows who else might be on the run from the Clave and need a place to stay? It's not like there are hotels in this city." He padded off toward the kitchen. Alec flung himself down on the sofa.
"He's working too hard," he said, looking worriedly after his boyfriend. "He's been up all night, every night, trying to decipher those runes."
"Is the Clave employing him?" Jocelyn wanted to know.
"No," Alec said slowly. "He's doing it for me, because of what Jace means to me."
He raised his sleeve, showing Jocelyn the Parabatai ruin on his inner forearm.
"You knew Jace wasn't dead," Clary said, her mind beginning to tick over thoughts. "Because you're Parabatai. Because of that tie between you. But you said you felt something wrong."
"Because he's possessed," Jocelyn said. "It's changed him. Valentine said that when Luke became a downworlder, he felt it. That sense of wrongness." Alec shook his head.
"But when Jace was possessed by Lilith, I didn't feel it," he said. "Now I can feel something wrong. Something off."
He looked down at his shoes. "You can feel it when your Parabatai dies. Like there was a cord tying you to something, and it has snapped, and now you're falling." He looked at Clary.
"I felt it, once in Idris, during the battle. But it was so brief, and when I returned to Alicante, Jace was alive. I convinced myself I had imagined it."
Clary shook her head, thinking of Jace and the blood-soaked sand by Lake Lynn.
"You didn't."
"What I feel now is different," he went on. "I feel like he's absent from the world, but not dead. Not imprisoned, just not here."
"That's just it," Clary said.
"Both times I've seen him and Sebastian, they've vanished into thin air. No portal. Just one minute they're here, and the next they were gone."
"When you talk about there or here," said Magnus, coming back into the room with a yawn,
"in this world and that world, what you're talking about are dimensions. There are only a few warlocks who can do dimensional magic. My old friend Ragnar could. Dimensions don't lie side by side. They're folded together, like paper. Where they intersect, dimensional pockets can be created that prevent magic from being able to find you. After all, you're not here, you're there."
"Maybe that's why we can't track him? Why Alec can't feel him?" said Clary.
"Could be." Magnus sounded almost impressed.
"It would mean there's literally no way to find them if they don't want to be found. And no way to get a message back to us if you did find them. That's complicated, expensive magic. Sebastian must have some connections."
The door buzzer sounded, and they all jumped. Magnus rolled his eyes.
"Everyone calm down," he said,
and vanished into the entryway. He was back a moment later with a man wrapped in a long parchment-colored robe, the back and sides inked with patterns of runes in dark red-brown. Though his hood was up, shadowing his face, he looked completely dry, as if not a flake of snow had fallen on him. When he pushed the hood back, Clary was not at all surprised to see the face of Brother Zachariah. Jocelyn set her mug down suddenly on the coffee table. She was looking at the silent brother. With his hood pushed back, you could see his dark hair, but his face was shadowed so that Clary could not see his eyes, only his high, rune-scarred cheekbones.
"You," Jocelyn said, her voice trailing off. "But Magnus told me that you would never..."
"Unexpected events call for unexpected measures."
Brother Zachariah's voice floated out, touching the inside of Clary's head. She knew from the expressions on the faces of the others that they could hear him too.
"I will say nothing to the Clave or Council of anything that transpires tonight. If the chance comes before me to save the last of the Herondale bloodline, I consider that of higher importance than the fealty I render the Clave."
"So that's settled," Magnus said. He made a strange pair with the silent brother beside him, one of them pale and blanched in robes, the other in bright yellow pajamas. "Any new insight into Lilith's runes?"
"I have studied the runes carefully and listened to all the testimony given in the council," said Brother Zachariah. "I believe that her ritual was twofold. First, she used the Daylighter's bite to revive Jonathan Morgenstern's consciousness. His body was still weak, but his mind and will were alive. I believe that when Jace Herendell was left alone on the roof with him, Jonathan drew on the power of Lilith's runes and forced Jace to enter the enspelled circle that surrounded him. At that point, Jace's will would have been subject to his. I believe he would have drawn on Jace's blood for the strength to rise and escape the roof, taking Jace with him."
"And somehow, all that created a connection between them?" Clary said. "Because when my mother stabbed Sebastian, Jace started to bleed."
"Yes. What Lilith did was a sort of twining ritual, not unlike our own Parabatai ceremony, but much more powerful and dangerous. The two were now bound inextricably. Should one die, the other will follow. No weapon in this world can wound only one of them."
"When you say they're bound inextricably," Alex said, leaning forward, "does that mean, Jace hates Sebastian. Sebastian murdered our brother. And I don't see how Sebastian can be all that fond of Jace either. He was horribly jealous of him all his life. He thought Jace was Valentine's favorite," added Clary. "Not to mention," Magnus noted, "that Jace killed him. That would put anyone off."
"It's like Jace doesn't remember that any of these things happened," Clary said in frustration.
"No, not like he doesn't remember them. Like he doesn't believe them."
"He remembers them. But the power of the binding is such that Jace's thoughts will pass over and around those facts, like water passing around rocks in a riverbed. It was like the spell that Magnus cast upon your mind, Clarissa. When you saw pieces of the invisible world, your mind would reject them, turn away from them. There is no point reasoning with Jace about Jonathan. The truth cannot break their connection."
Clary thought of what had happened when she had reminded Jace that Sebastian had killed Max. How his face had temporarily furrowed in thought, then smoothed out, as if he had forgotten what she had said as quickly as she'd said it.
"Take some small comfort in the fact that Jonathan Morgenstern is as bound as your Jace is. He cannot harm or hurt Jace. Nor would he want to," Zachariah added.
Alec threw his hands up. "So they love each other now? They're best friends?" The hurt and jealousy was plain in his tone.
"No, they are each other now. They see as the other sees. They know the other is somehow indispensable to them. Sebastian is the leader. The primary of the two. What he believes, Jace will believe. What he wants, Jace will do."
"So he's possessed," Alex said flatly.
"In a possession, there is often some part of the person's original consciousness left intact. Those who have been possessed speak of watching their own actions from the outside, crying out, but unable to be heard. But Jace is fully inhabiting his body and mind. He believes himself sane. He believes that this is what he wants."
"So what did he want from me?" Clary demanded in a shaking voice. "Why did he come to my room tonight?" She hoped her cheeks didn't burn. She tried to push back the memory of kissing him, the pressure of his body against hers in the bed.
"He still loves you," said Brother Zachariah.